The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
It's the only show where the tail actually wags the dog. It's a howling good time. I wasn't going to bark to start the show off here, Dr. Reb. I thought I'd mix it up a little bit. What's going on, man? Dark Side of the Pooch, baby. You ready to go?
No, I'm ready. And I've got some herpes facts for you.
Oh, nice. Is this from animals or from you?
No, okay. Goodness, not from me.
It's like luggage. You know, it never goes away.
It doesn't. And I'm going to talk about that. We can talk about it whenever you want.
All right. That's good. Let me write this down because I want to get into some dog thefts. The dog theft numbers have come out. We have some dog cost. I have some trivia questions for you. And now I can talk about herpes. Beautiful. Hey, first of all, we want to let everyone know that a big show is brought to you by Ed's Pet World. I get down there at least once a week. I actually do some stuff down at the Jay Barker Radio Network, so it's right next door down there in Homewood. They've been down there for 50 years. Unbelievable pets. All kinds of stuff. It was weird. I was buying some sucker fish, and I bought an iridescent shark, and my fish weren't doing particularly well. And Angie and Seth, who own the joint, said, bring in some water. And I brought in some water and found out I had some ammonia in my water. I had a fish that had died in my tank. It was stuck behind something. I didn't see it, and it was killing off my other fish. That's the kind of information you get at Ed's Pet World. They got chinchillas. They got rabbits. They had a sugar flyer down there the other day. They have a cockatoo. They have alligators. Turtles, the whole nine yards. Check out Ed's Pet World. Of course, Seth travels the United States of America, also selling toys. Buy, sell, or trade. You find something really cool in the attic. It's all still in the box. Star Wars stuff, watches, collectibles, vintage toys, and more. Check out Ed's Pet World. They do wonderful, wonderful work. While we do this show, and it runs every single day, Monday through Friday, right here on Tony Curry Radio. And of course, you can hear it at 7 o'clock every single night. And also, wherever you get your podcast, we're on every major indice out there. You cannot have a podcast forum without having Dark Side of the Pooch on it. But Hurricane Ian is going to be hitting the Florida coast somewhere. Whether it's from Apalachicola all the way down to Tampa. And a lot of people are wondering about the care of their pets when hurricane season is well in force. This will be the first major one that will hit the United States. Give me some clues. Give me some hints. I know a lot of people have outdoor cats that perhaps they don't see very often unless they're just feeding them. Some things from an anxiety standpoint to make sure your pets are cared for, whether you have to evacuate or not. Go.
The most important thing is the microchip. We talked about yes. a little bit with that last week and mm-hmm. what it does and how it does it. But the microchip is for natural disasters. It's the best thing that you can do because some of these pets, whether it's the actual event or the lead up to the event, people are, you know, might be leaving their place and might be leaving it in a hurry. And, you know, maybe they leave a door open and the dog runs out or the cat runs out. So there may be a situation even before the event occurs where a pet separated from their owner. So if they're microchipped, they stand a better chance to get reunited with the owner. So that's the main thing that you can do. You know, I guess if you think that you're really going to be underwater, they make life preservers and little life jackets for dogs and cats. So, you know, that may not be what, you know, on the list for everybody, but it, you know, it could be something that you put in your, you know, your emergency kit for your dog or cat.
What would you say that, with a storm surge of 6 to 12 feet and say a category 3 coming on board, who's got a better chance to survive, a dog or a human?
I mean, probably a human just from the standpoint that, okay, if there's just a human or a dog, just like out in the wild.
Yeah. And you can't leave. You can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, if you can't go anywhere.
Dogs know to go higher land, right?
No, I mean, I don't know. I would still say the person because of the warning that they have. You know, a person at least can like prepare, even if it's just mentally, you know, and walk through scenarios in their head. Now, if we're like talking like pre any type of notification or warning, yeah, then I might say a dog.
Okay,
can survive better than a person.
Who's got a better shot at surviving, a dog or a cat? Because cats can climb, but they don't like water, correct?
Yeah, my money's on a cat. I mean, the cats are just so resilient, and even if they get injured, I've seen cats live through just, you know, horrific injuries, and you know, they just they manage for long, you know, not just short term, yeah, but short term and long term. So And you know, everyone knows that cats have more lives than dogs.
Dr. Rab Stewart is from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. He owns the joint. He's been open now for a few years. He's fantastic. I take all my animals there. I love the guy. He's the best. Anyone that goes to Dr. Rab knows that he's the best. His staff does a wonderful job. At Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, and of course, 208-0301, 208-0301. It's the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. I think it's really interesting. We talked a lot about this over the last couple of years because of the pandemic. I think I saw something that roughly 35 to 40% of people end up taking in a pet over the pandemic because they were home, they wanted some company, and then of course they're going back to work and there's anxiety issues and everything else. Lifetime of Care study by Pets Best just came out yesterday, and they pinpointed what it cost to raise a dog that makes it to 13 years old. Do you want to take a stab at what an average family, and this is what you're supposed to spend, assuming you're doing, you know, taking care of your pet and feeding it and giving it the shots it needs and everything else. What do you think the average person spends on a dog that lives 13 years old?
I think that you're going to spend on average, probably, I'll go a little high here. You're probably going to spend, let's say, $800 a year. And that's if they're healthy. Like if you have a dog that's healthy from birth to till death, which is, you know, probably not very likely. So you're going to be in the 11 to 13,000 range. All right, my guess.
Let's go $55,132.
All right. All the dogs and cats are getting sick then. All the dogs and cats are getting sick.
And what's amazing is $45,780 per cat. Now, you know, I've heard these studies that, you know, the average child will cost you somewhere just south of $1 million if they're in your home till they're 19 or 20 years old, which is really kind of hard to fathom because I don't think I've made $1 million and yet I have three children and you figure it out, right? But when you take about the bicycle lessons and you take about the horseback ride, you put everything in there, that's about what it comes up. I was trying to do the math because at 13 years and $55,000, that sounds like someone spending an absorbent amount on their pet. But really, when you talk about $65 bags of dog food, when you're talking
but
about
you know,
toys.
You're right, Tony. Yeah, and I did not factor that in. I was doing just veterinary care. Yeah. So when it comes to food and like boarding and stuff like that, yeah, I mean, it's going to be more. But still, I mean, if this tells me anything, it's that the price is right at Rossbridge Animal Hospital.
There you go. Let me ask you this. Should that be a deterrent? I mean, when you know, we talk about getting married and then you're supposed to discuss how many kids you want to have and when you're going to have them. What happens is you go on your honeymoon, she gets pregnant because you're on your honeymoon, and 9 months later, she starts a family. That's the way it is. I think a lot of people just do that. Hopefully they have that conversation about raising children and how many kids do you want to have. I know my ex and I were like, we want to raise one, or we want to biologically have one, we want to adopt another one, and then we adopted two, and then the biological one came and she was a miracle baby, and so we were blessed with three. But when you're buying or investing in an animal, I guess some people do just bring a dog in thinking, yeah, we'll take care of it. We'll figure it out. Right. But at the tune of $55,000, that is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And I think that people can, it's somewhat easy to come up with the food number.
Yeah.
You know, a bag of food costs X, but you know, when you factor in, you know, your unplanned for medical expenses, especially for chronic things that are annoying, like skin issues and ear issues. And for a lot of these cases, there's no permanent cure because they're, you know, maybe allergy based or autoimmune based or something like that. And so those diseases you have to just manage with either consistent chronic medication or, you know, inconsistent chronic medication, maybe seasonal medication or something. So, and we're spending so much more time with our pets that the ailments that seem, you know, not so critical that used to get overlooked because the pets lived outside, yeah, you know, and maybe somebody'd spend, you know, maybe 20 minutes with them a day. You know, now we're spending 20 hours with them a day. And so these little things that went unseen and unheard, you know, back in, you know, 40 years ago or whatever, those are prevalent now. And so they're being treated. And yep. Yeah, I mean, it costs money. And I think that some people are overwhelmed and surprised by the cost of treating those things for 13 years.
Yeah, and according to this article too, and I think it's certainly is warranted. You better plan on having at least one pet emergency in your life. I mean, there's going to be something, whether it's a snake bite or whether the kid runs it over with a bicycle or something, that's going to cost you a few thousand dollars to make sure that you take care of your pet. Correct? I mean, it's going to happen.
Yeah, my own personal dog has had one emergency kind of deal, and that's something that. The thing that he had to have a surgery on his intestines because he had an obstruction from swallowing some things he shouldn't have swallowed. And for a routine, client who doesn't, do the surgery themselves like I did. I mean, it was a big deal surgery, and this was probably 10 years ago. And I mean, it would have cost anybody else probably $3,000 because he had to have part of his bowel removed, like a section removed, and then the two ends sewn back together, which is a big deal and a time consuming deal. So my dog has had one. I hope he doesn't have another one, but so I relate to that.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net for your email questions. Info@TonyCurry, that's Curry with a K, TonyCurryRadio.net. Thanks for downloading the TKR app. Tens of thousands of folks have done that. You listen to Dark Side of the Pooch every Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. And wherever you listen to your podcast, just pull up Dark Side of the Pooch. We're the only show out of hundreds of thousands of podcasts that's called Dark Side of the Pooch, which is a great thing with Dr. Rab Stewart. Rab, of course, can be found there at the Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. All right, you brought up herpes. I can't wait any longer. We're 10 minutes into the show. I got to know what you had to do with herpes in the Rossbridge Animal Hospital.
Cats are real prone to herpes virus. And we had a case, probably the worst case of herpes virus that I've seen in practice. And in cats, herpes virus is a respiratory virus. It's not a reproductive genital deal like in people. So it's always fun to, introduce it because everyone thinks you're going to go down a road that you're not going to go down. It's a good little teaser, but it's a respiratory virus and it's highly contagious. And, it's spread from cat to cat through respiratory, secretions like sneezing and, snot and coughing and things like that. So, it's usually, diagnosed in younger cats, because they've been exposed to other cats, whether it's in multi-cat households or in humane societies or shelters and rescues and things like that. So the more populous an area is with cats, the more likely that it's going to be around. So it like people, it's a virus that the cat never gets rid of. It usually lasts between 7 and 14 days as far as the symptoms go. So sneezing, runny nose. They also get conjunctivitis. So, their eyes look kind of puffy and they also may have some clear or mucus discharge from their eyes. And usually it does not need treatment. It lasts about 7 to 14 days and then it goes back into dormancy in the nervous system. And it can stay there for a long time. It stays there for the whole cat's life, but it can stay dormant for a long time. One thing that brings it out if the cat is stressed, same thing in people. So if the cat, if the owner leaves town or if somebody comes to work on their house or anything that can throw the cat's normal schedule out of whack, that virus comes back out and you see the symptoms again. And it's really important to test cats for this, number one, so they don't spread it, but number two, so that you know if your cat develops respiratory symptoms and they're mild, then you don't have to go in to see your veterinarian. So there's we swab their throat and we swab their conjunctiva, and then if they're positive, we know if your cat's still eating and drinking and has mild respiratory signs, you don't need to rush into the vet because this virus has come out of dormancy. Just let it ride for 7 to 14 days, and if they keep eating or drinking, then they don't need to be seen. But in this case that we had in the practice last week, the cat had a really high fever, over 105, was not eating, not drinking. It had a comorbidity. It had Khaleesi virus, which is another upper respiratory virus that eventually the cat gets over and they don't keep it forever. It also had a bacterial infection of mycoplasma. And that's all this stuff is very common because the owners introduced a new cat to the household and it was a cat that had no history. They found it. And so this other cat that they brought into the house spread the virus. And so now that cat has it and it'll be something that it lives with forever. But it's just one of those interesting things, how you have a virus that affects one, you know, animal or person one way, and then the same type of virus affects another one completely differently.
So when it's in dormancy, then it's not contagious? Is that like
correct?
Like, so if like a herpes sore, in other words, if you don't have any herpes sore, then you can kiss people. But I mean, but you don't know, and they've got it for life. So how is it treatable again? In case I just missed this, how is there something they take, or you just try to not to get them stressed out? What's the situation there?
There's no treatment for it. You can't get rid of it, but you can treat the symptoms so that they get better faster. One thing that you can give is a supplement called lysine. And it's just an antiviral medication, and they come in treats. It's lysine treats, mm-hmm. And you can give those during an outbreak, or you can give them every day. The other antiviral that can help with this is called Idoxuridine, and it's actually an eye drop, and you can give that during symptoms, and it can help the virus go away, faster. But the eye drops have to be given, to be effective, they have to be given really frequently. I mean, just every few hours. So a lot of people, they don't end up going that route because they just don't have, you know, their lifestyle doesn't allow them to give, you know, a drop to their cat, every 2 or 3 hours. And also most of the cats probably won't tolerate it anyway. So in that regard, it's almost exactly like a person, where a person can take antivirals and they can cause the virus to go into dormancy, faster.
Is it time to kick your dog out of bed? Plus, the most stolen dog in 2021 and 2022. We have that for you in just a second right here on Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart, 208-0301, 208-0301. The Rossburg Animal Hospital on Facebook. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net for your email questions. Karen down in Wind Creek said she heard the show last week. We were talking about euthanasia and what's the best way to put your dogs down. We've talked about that several times. Very difficult time, certainly, in a pet family. She wants to know, what's the best way to remember your pet? She said, should I have my dog cremated? Is there something you can make plasters of their feet? What are some different things we can do to remember our favorite pets?
Getting the ashes back is the most common thing. So having them cremated, and then some people will, you know, they kind of choose the urn of their choice. That's the most common thing. And something that usually comes with that is a mold or a plaster of one of their paws. Mm-hmm. And that's really popular. People like those. Some people will request, you know, maybe some hair be clipped, you know, and they kind of do with that what they want to do. But there's all kind of interesting things out there that you can do, as far as like kind of decorative pieces. I have a coworker, and she lost one of her dogs, and she found a guy that made this like acrylic like mold. And she put all kinds of like trinkets from the dog and like through the dog's life into this mold. And it is really cool.
So that's cool.
It's not, yeah. It's just a beautiful thing that she has. It's like a centerpiece in her house. We talked about this several months ago, but one thing I would love to do is have my dog stuffed. I mean, I know it sounds really weird and creepy, and I'd probably never do it, but it just, I don't know. There's just something about it that seems so cool to me.
It would be kind of cool to do a taxidermy on your pet. And the other thing we talked about was where you can actually have their fur taken off and make rugs.
Yeah. That's super weird. I mean, I don't know what's weirder, but I think I said when we talked about this before, I would really love to have my dog stuffed into a position where he looks super aggressive,
yeah,
and put him right next to the door. So if anyone comes in my house, they're immediately freaked out.
I love it. Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossburg Animal Hospital, info at TonyCurryRadio.net for all your email questions. Larry in Sarasota wants to know, do dogs sense heatness, hot? He said he has a fire pit, and there's obviously embers and different things that are popping out. And whenever he lets his dog outside and they're sitting around the fire pit, now that it's starting to cool off a little bit, he said the dog sits unusually close to the fire pit to the point where he feels like maybe he could actually get burned. Do dogs know what they're doing around fires?
I mean, sometimes they do. Instincts should tell them that. I mean, dogs know when they're getting hot and when they can get burned. You know, they can feel it just like we can. But I think that there are some dogs who have an unhealthy fascination with heat and fire, because this isn't the first time that someone has brought this question to me. Yeah. I have a client that has a dog that, I mean, just cannot get enough of fire, and it tries to eat it.
Oh,
and so the owners found out, well, you know, the first time the dog, you know, tried to eat the fire, they thought maybe, hey, okay, lesson learned. It didn't know what it was, but I mean, it was something that the dog tried to do again and again. And then I think after the third time, they said, okay, anytime we're out here around the fire pit, the dog cannot be out here. So, you know, I think it's just some dogs are just, they're just maybe not the brightest, you know, bulb in the house. And so they don't know. And their fascination and curiosity gets the best of them. So that they can feel the heat. I mean, there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with their nerves. Yeah. But I think maybe they're just a little too curious.
All right. Another interesting story that came out this week. Lots to get into here on Dark Side of the Pooch. You hear it every Monday through Friday here on the TKR app. Tony Curry Radio on Android. You have to spell out Tony Curry Radio on Apple. TKR. 7 o'clock and wherever you get your podcast. The AKC came out on Monday of last week and said dog thefts. This is really interesting because we just talked about how many people are out there actually bringing dogs into, and there people are adopting pets left and right. Now they're finding out how important they are, certainly during a pandemic. It was nice to have that therapeutic feeling and have something, a little fur ball in the corner. But dog thefts are up 40% from a year ago this month, which is really amazing. And there are only three breeds that seem like they're being stolen more than any other breed. Do you want to take a stab at what the most stolen dog is over the last 12 months?
I'll give you three that I think could possibly be on the list.
Okay.
Maltese, French Bulldog, Yorkies. Did I get any of those?
Yes. French Bulldog is number one. Yorkies are number three. And Labradors are number two.
Oh. I got two. Hey, that's not bad.
That
hey,
is really
meatloaf.
Good.
No, you're, meatloaf said two out of three ain't bad.
You're drilling it. Here's the crazy thing, and I had to read the article twice to make sure there wasn't a misprint. But they say that some of the puppies, if you can get a French Bulldog or a Labrador or a Yorkshire Terrier, can sell as for much as $100,000 in the black market. Who in the hell spent $100,000 on a French Bulldog? I'm assuming that was supposed to be $10,000, but then it was quoted again as $100,000. Now, if you have a celebrity where money is no issue, and you're obviously, I want that dog, now go find that dog or go steal that dog for me. But that's amazing. That really is. And I'll be honest with you, there just seems to be so many dogs and cats in this world of mine now that I the idea of even stealing. And I mentioned my Havanese, which would be a perfect dog to steal because he's a lap dog. He's very, very happy. He's very, very light. He weighs about 4 or 5 pounds. And I could not find him the other night and he just disappeared. And I thought, okay, someone has stolen my dog because he'll run out of the yard and he ended up being under the deck. But yeah, I never really understood. And again, with collars and stuff, I guess if they have, but again, that's where you need to chip up, right?
Well, I mean, forget the black market. I mean, you can get a French Bulldog for like, I mean, at the most, like $3,000 on the regular market. Yeah. So why is anybody paying $100,000 for a stolen dog? You know, I don't know. I don't get it. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's why you get them chipped and you get the collars. But the problem is if the pet gets stolen, then they're just going to take the collar right off. That's going to do no good.
Yeah.
And then if the whoever steals the dog, then they sell the dog. You can just kind of, you know, as far as the microchip goes, eventually they might get scanned. But let's say an owner comes in to our
do you scan pets at your place?
We do when we have a reason to.
Yeah.
But and again, where our practice is, we have, you know, very little worry that there's anything, you know, illegal going on. So let's just say a client comes into our practice and they say, yeah, I just got this French Bulldog from a rescue group. It's a year old or 6 months old or whatever. And I'm not really sure why it got surrendered. And I don't have any paperwork with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're probably not going to scan that dog.
Yeah.
Because we're going to take the owner, you know, at its word. And even if we did scan the dog, we said, hey, this dog is a microchip. And we would assume that it was, you know, implanted by the owner, you know, the rightful owner of the dog.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, it would be really hard. You know, when you have people, and you know, I told I told my son this the other day. You know, when you have people that are trying to mislead you and deceive you, sometimes there's just nothing you can do about it because the entire world is based on the honor system. I mean, it really is. Yep. The entire world is based on the honor system, and you can do and you can go as far as you want to go, but sometimes there's just no way to figure it out.
Agreed. I know. One final article here, and then we're going to let you fly. Psychology Today came out this morning, and the article is called "It's Time to Kick Your Dog Out of Bed." You know how I feel about having animals sleep in my bed. I treat my dog like it's a family member. I love it. I do everything for my two dogs, and I love them, but the bedroom's off limits. First of all, because I don't want them to pee and poop back in the bedroom. And second of all, I'm a light sleeper, and I don't like that. Although I know there's research out there that says that some people, and it's mostly single people, sleep better with a dog or a cat in their beds. Do you have a take on whether it's good or bad? At least according to Psychology Today, they say a lot of people are sleeping with their animals, but they probably shouldn't be because of allergies and dander, and they are light sleepers. They don't think their animals are waking up in the middle of the night, but they are. And of course, I've heard story after story of story. Saturday morning, 5 o'clock, I need to go out there licking you in the face.
Personally, I do not like my dog in my bed with me.
Amen.
For all of those reasons that you just said.
Yeah.
It's probably because I just, you know, I know too much, and I know that my dog is never, ever completely clean, no matter if I bathe it and then, you know, 30 minutes later or whatever. Mm-hmm. But also, I move around a lot when I sleep. I usually have at least one kid that winds up coming in my bed at night. Mm-hmm. Now my kids are still young. I've always encouraged my dog to sleep in his own bed, and he has a very nice bed, and they're just, in my opinion, I mean, they are like our pets are like our kids, but we still encourage our kids to sleep in their own bed. True. Because that's what's good for my wife and I, and that's what's good for them. Now we go to greater lengths to keep our dog out than our kids, you know, but I've never been one to let my dog in the bed. And it's mainly just because, you know, I know a lot about dogs, and I know what is on their bodies, and I know what's in their mouths, and I know what's on the bottom of their feet. Yeah. And, you know, I want to have my space in my bed.
There you go. And I think that's totally normal. I really do. The one thing that I've always had issues with is when you meet somebody and she's single, and you go back to her place for the first time, and you're about ready to commence a particular relationship threshold there. And next thing you know, the dog or the cat's in the bed with you, and you're kind of like, hey, I'd like to be with you, but this doesn't make me feel very comfortable. And they're like, this is where my dog sleeps. And I'm like,
yeah. And there's, I mean, you're feeling something, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I like, I don't, what's going on back there.
Yeah.
And it's actually the dog that is now rubbing against you. But, you know, I'll say this. There's nothing. I mean, it's just for me, it's a personal choice. It's like, I don't like mayonnaise on my hamburger, but there's lots of people that do. Hey, go knock yourself out, man. You know, if you want your dog to sleep in your bed, I mean, it's not like you're going to get some fatal illness or anything. Yep. That's not going to happen.
What about tartar sauce? You know, you like tartar sauce in your burgers?
Oh, I never tried that.
Oh, like, that's a Midwestern thing. You need to try it. It's fantastic.
I do like tartar sauce, so I'm going
to
try it.
Yeah, next time you go to McDonald's, they get great tartar sauce because they always do the fish thing, but tell them to get them make a burger instead of the mac sauce. Use the tartar sauce. It's awesome.
I'm going to tell them I want the Tone the Bone special.
There you go. Dr. Ab Stewart, Dark Side of the Pooch. Find it all over the world on podcast. Thanks to hundreds of thousands of folks who've listened to all of our previous episodes and listened to it. First run shows here on TKR, 7 o'clock every Monday through Friday, 7 o'clock Central Time, so you can hear the show. If you missed any of the answers, you can listen to the following night. Again, podcast is Bad Boys. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Seth, Angie, the entire crew down there, they're wonderful. I love them. They're knuckleheads, man. They've been in business for over 50 years, or nearly 50 years. All kinds of exotic pets down there. They have a cockatoo down there that's worth the price of admission, and it's free. Just walk in the place. They got water turtles. They got chinchillas. They got ferrets. They got rabbits. They got mice for your snakes. They got snakes. They got tarantulas, the whole nine yards. And, of course, Seth now is a big toy collector. It's like all the animals are like from the chest down, and all the toys are from the chest up. Go down there and check out all of his unboxed vintage collectible watches, toys, Star Wars stuff. It's amazing. It is Ed's Pet World. Ed's Pet World. Tell him Tony Curry sent you, and Dr. Ramp sent you as well. Dr. Ramp, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week. Fantastic show.
See you, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.